Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
Okay, I feel like for those of you who are just joining us, you're going to wonder why I'm giving cattle stats, but people really want to know why we always talk about cows. So from a listener, you know, I feel like you guys are constantly being sure I am up to date and up to speed. You're like my giant research department. So thank you to the person who says, hey, in 1960, there were 70. Oh, let me read this number right. That would be hundreds of thousands, millions. 741 million head of cattle. Cattle reached their peak in terms of headcount around the world in 1989 when there were more than a billion cattle. Today, the cattle headcount around the world is somewhere in the 998 or 999 million. So that's like, you know, just shy of a billion cattle. Let me just say this about cattle. God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills and the cattle on all the other hills as well. So there you go. That's my cattle comment for the day. We currently have two steer that we are fattening up. So there you go. That's my viewpoint on such things. In case you missed it, Hunter Baker was here just a couple of days ago. We talked about artificial intelligence. Why bring that up? Because a company called DESA now claims that they have created the most realistic AI simulation of voice that we've ever heard to date, which means that there's enough audio already of my voice out there that they could simulate me. So I'm just letting Paul Perreault know that in advance. All right, Paul, where are we at? Can I keep talking or am I supposed to be taking a break?
Well, you probably should take a break and then get to Adam.
Hey, is Adam available?
Adam's available. He's waiting.
Okay, I love it.
He's chomping
Thank
at
you.
The bit.
So, you know, sometimes I just get kind of lost. Okay, so Paul Perreault, by the way, thank you for being back. We missed you when you were gone, and it's been a joy to be back with you on air this week. Adam Holtz up next from Plugged In at Focus on the Family. He is going to, he's going to review what's on the small screen, what's on the big screen, and he and I are going to talk about smartphones making us dumb. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Music means Adam Holtz from Plugged In on Focus on the Family is here with us. You can check out what we're talking about today at PluggedIn.com. Adam, I understand from Paul that you have some cow comments. I'm just going to tell my listeners in advance this is not turning into a farm show. I do periodically talk about chickens, and this morning we have talked briefly about cows, and you and I are going to talk about Rotten Tomatoes here in just a second. But this is like technically not a farm show.
Not a farm show, but it warms my heart to hear you talking about cattle because I grew up in a small town in Iowa. My dad's family, extended family, still has a big cattle farm. And I just remember growing up, you know, every family meal, not my immediate family, but, you know, like holidays, you know, we would talk about the markets for, well, that was the only thing anybody ever talked about, you know. And,
sure. You
know, it just brought back this warm memory of my childhood, and my grandmother was actually National Cowbell President in 1978, and she has, there's a display of her in the Portal to Texas History. So my grandparents were big cattle raisers, and I loves me some cow. That's the bottom line. Just wanted to
say
that.
We knew we liked you. We just didn't. Yeah. We just weren't sure why, and now we know.
I know.
So
there you go.
So we're gonna let you talk about some movies.
Yeah, probably so, right?
so can we start with A Dog's Journey? I've been
sure
actually sent a lot of promo material on A Dog's Journey. So let's start with that one.
You know, this is a sequel to the 2017 movie A Dog's Purpose starring Dennis Quaid. And in that movie, we met two characters, Ethan, Dennis's character, and his dog, Bailey, who was with him through his whole life. And if you're saying to yourself, wait, dogs, even with dog year inflation, don't live that long, that is absolutely correct. In that movie, we found out that Bailey, for some unexplained reason, each time he died, he came back as another dog. So his memories and personality were all intact, just transferred via some technological miracle. They don't explain it. Into a new doggy body. And eventually Ethan figures out what is happening. Well, as this movie is opening, the current incarnation of Bailey, a big ancient Saint Bernard, he's almost at the end of this doggy life. But Ethan and his wife Hannah have their daughter-in-law, whose name is Gloria, living with them. And Gloria has a little toddler named CJ, who the grandparents, of course, dote on. But the problem is the family's son has been killed in a car accident, and Gloria is a wreck. She's borderline alcoholic. She's very self-absorbed. She's angry and bitter and lost. And at one point, she storms off in a huff from the family and just says, you know, I'm leaving. And so right after that, I know this is a lot of plot, but it's setting up the point of the movie. Right after that, Bailey is on the verge of passing, and Ethan whispers in his ear, you know, if you come back as a dog again, make sure you find little CJ and protect her. And so the movie really is about the various ongoing incarnations of Bailey the dog in different bodies and genders, although the movie doesn't mess with gender much, but sometimes he's a boy, sometimes he's a girl, protecting CJ as she grows up. And even though the premise sounds pretty weird when I talk about it, it's a pretty delightful movie. And the reincarnation here has nothing to do with Buddhism or Hinduism. It's merely a plot device. And the movie ends with a suggestion of a sort of non-denominational heaven, if you will, where dogs and people all end up. I really liked it. They were passing out Kleenex ahead of time. I said, I'm not going to cry. Oh, darn, I'm crying. So I was not boohooing like some of the people in the theater were, but I did have a little tear streaking down my face. Great movie. I mean, I think the reincarnation is the biggest issue to deal with here. At one point, it looks like CJ might be assaulted, and there's the mom's drinking problem, but it's certainly not glorified. It's obviously destructive. So, you know, a few fairly mild content issues that parents probably will want to be aware of. But, you know, honestly, this is a lovely movie. And I think even the reincarnation stuff gives parents an opportunity to talk about the afterlife, to talk about heaven, to talk about what we believe as Christians, and, you know, who goes to heaven and why.
Okay, so I do think there are a lot of issues for parents to be prepared to talk about and deal with. And yet I do think that there are real life issues dealt with in the movie. There is real trauma. There are opportunities to talk about why some of our friends at school, you know, they don't have a mom and a dad, or why they live with their grandparents,
right.
Or it's an opportunity for grandparents to talk about the responsibility of caring for, but then also letting go. There's definitely an acknowledgement here that there's just a lot of stuff that's outside of our control. Even if we are people who like to think we can control everything, we can't. There are things that we have to entrust not only to God, but you know, to the watch, care, and welfare of others. So there's a ministry out there for folks who are interested in checking this out. It's called Lutheran Church Charities. So you can find these canine comfort dogs at LutheranChurchCharities.org, or you can just Google canine comfort dogs. I actually spoke at the National Comfort Dog Conference. And so
cattle there?
No, there are many cattle. No cattle.
Having an animal theme, so I wanted to
It was a great experience of being in a room where there's a lot of people, but there were a lot of dogs. And these dogs are engaged in what I can only describe as ministry. Yeah. And so there may be people listening right now who are in the flood affected regions of the country where the LCC, they send as missionaries these canine comfort dogs, and they do so into every sort of traumatic environment you can imagine. So they went to California during the fires, and they went to, and they go to hurricane affected regions, and they go to places where there have been school shootings, and they go to places where, where people are in trauma, because people will allow a dog in to comfort them when they might be resistant to allowing a person in. But you and I need an entree to conversation. And so I just want to lift sort of all of this up, this dog's journey conversation, recognizing that neither Adam nor I are suggesting that reincarnation is a legit thing. But this gives us an opportunity to talk about that. We're not suggesting that dogs are soulish in the same way that people are soulish, nor that they go to heaven in the same way that people go to heaven. Like, we want to be clear about about the theology, but we also want to say sometimes culture gives us something that provides opportunity for conversation and entree to conversation about a lot of other things, if we are willing to take what culture is offering. So that's the offering up of a dog's journey. Hey, Adam, we have to take a break, but when we come back, can we talk about Arthur and what's happening on this PBS Kids cartoon?
We certainly can.
Okay, that's up next. You're on Mornings with Carmen.
The same power that rose Jesus from the grave. The same power that commanded dead to wake lives in us. Lives in us.
Continuing my conversation now with Adam Holtz from Plugged In Reviews. You can check out what they are doing at PluggedIn.com. Adam, so Arthur. Is a PBS kids cartoon. It's not even from my vantage point particularly super well crafted. Like, it's pretty basic cartoonagery. Is that a word?
It's been on for 22 years, and it sort of feels like PBS put it on autopilot and forgot that it existed.
And then they decided it needed a gay storyline.
Got to have the gay storyline. You and I have talked about this before, and this is an issue that activists, in running many of these shows, many of them kids shows, feel this compulsion to add a gay storyline. We've seen it with a number of Disney shows, and increasingly we're just seeing it with animated shows, with kids shows, with shows that you're like, okay, this is a story about anthropomorphized animals. Why do we need to add, this activism for gay marriage? And I just watched the clip a little bit ago, and I will say, sometimes we'll get sort of a wink or a nod or an allusion to a same-sex couple. This is way more than this. This is a main character, Mr. Ratburn, who's Arthur's teacher and who is, as you might have guessed, a rat. Getting married to an aardvark named Patrick. We see them walking down the aisle. We see the whole ceremony. So not only are we affirming same-sex relationships, we're affirming same-sex marriage, and we're showing it, in terms of a marriage or wedding ceremony. So
okay, I thought for a minute we lost me, but actually we lost Adam. So Paul will work to reconnect with Adam. And I think that we can probably sum this up by saying, hey, if your kids are watching Arthur on PBS, it's not the Arthur that you were watching 22 years ago. And so let's, again, be very, very careful about what we are allowing into our children's minds via the screens that are in front of them. And don't assume that just because something had a storyline that you could trust the last time you watched, that it still has a storyline that you can trust today. So that would be my comment about that. Adam is back. Adam, I would love for you. I made a transition while you were gone, and my transition is to an obituary. Conway just died a couple of days ago at the age of 85. You guys have what I would describe It's interesting to just sort of let a person talk for themselves in what I would consider an obit, but that's kind of what you've done here. Talk about Tim Conway.
You know, Tim Conway is obviously a comedian and an actor who most of us are going to be familiar with from the Carol Burnett Show. Now, full confession, I was not very old when the Carol Burnett Show was on, but I certainly have memories of my parents watching it. And, you know, Tim Conway and Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman and Don Knotts and all of these characters that they played. And they had this sort of always on the brink of being out of control, physical comedy, situational comedies, that sort of thing. And, you know, we live in a time now where comedians seem to think that the only things that are funny are using profanity and, you know, telling really lewd jokes. And what was great about Tim was he didn't go that way, and he didn't think that comedy had to depend on going for this, you know, lowest common denominator kind of gag to get a laugh. And so this interview we have done with him really unpacks that idea and just some of his convictions and his boundaries of things he wasn't going to do to try to get a laugh. And man, I love that story these days.
Absolutely. Funny just for the sake of being funny. Funny for funny. Talk about smartphones and how they're making us dumb.
You know, it seems like with every article that comes out about smartphones and about social media, which is often, you know, the thing that we do the most with them, there is just this growing sense that this technology that we have all embraced is really doing damage. And this particular study out of Great Britain showed that one of the things that's happening is that smartphones are isolating young people from old people. So that's a little bit of a new angle here, that they're really this study, I think, shows something that we kind of know anecdotally. If you have kids that have phones, you know that they can become totally self-absorbed in them if we don't help them with boundaries. So this study just pushed that out. And interestingly this week, I can't remember the last time I said a hearty amen to something that Madonna has said, but she did an interview with Vogue in which she said that when her kids got smartphones, quote, it ended my relationship with my children. Not completely, but it became a very, very big part of their lives. They became too inundated with imagery and started to compare themselves to other people, and that's really bad for self-growth, unquote. Madonna, you know, we've had any number of problems with her over the years, but even she recognizes that this technology has had not a great effect on her own children.
So when you think about smartphones and how they're used today, you know, maybe what's your one line of encouragement to listeners?
Well, I think the one word I would say is intentionality. And I think that smartphones, perhaps more than any other technology, they sort of they really aid and abet passive consumption of media, because our brains get that little dopamine hit every time we see something we like, whether that's social media or a news site or whatever we might do on them. And so I think as parents, it really behooves us to be intentionally engaged with our kids, because I think that when we intentionally engage with our kids, they may resist at first, but when they see that we truly want a relationship with them and to spend intentional time with them, that is something that they're longing for, even if they might initially seem to push back against that.
Well, and they're going to push back. Let's just
and
go
they
ahead.
Will.
And, yeah, so prepare
no, they
for
will.
Your kids to push back. Absolutely. All right, Adam, thank you, as always, for, you know, paying attention to things that not all of us have time to pay attention to or want to pay attention to, but clearly need to know about. So thank you so much for helping us engage with what's happening in the culture. We really appreciate it.
You are welcome. And I love being on your show every week to talk about this kind of stuff.
Hey, you should pull it up on myfaithradio.com and listen, because I got Van Jones from CNN on next.
Oh, thank you. I will do that.
All right, man. All right. We'll see you next week. Hey, friends, that's what's up next here. I'm going to have Van Jones from CNN. We're talking about the Redemption Project. That's up right after Breakpoint. So up next here on the show is Van Jones from CNN. But I have some breaking news. If you have not yet become aware, Grumpy Cat, the internet celebrity, Grumpy Cat, has died. All you have to do is look at the headlines and actually look at the pictures of this cat and say, and it will like give you an instant facelift. The look of contempt on the face of this cat makes you smile. Like you cannot not smile looking at Grumpy Cat. So if you need a facelift today, give Grumpy Cat a moment of your time. There are literally millions of Grumpy Cat memes out there. And I suspect that our social media feeds will be full of them today. And so now you'll know why. And that is according to Grumpy Cat on Grumpy Cat's own Twitter feed, because some days are grumpier than others. So getting beyond the grump and getting to redemption, Van Jones from CNN has launched something called the Redemption Project. And it is a series of programs on Sunday nights, 9 p.m. on CNN. And you are not often going to hear me, tout that you should be going and watching such a series, but I'm touting this one. And if you have not checked it out yet, I really want you to do so. Van Jones is up next.
Watching your teen spin out of control is hard. It's painful, but it's even worse when it places undue stress on your marriage as well. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. A family crisis will amplify whatever tension exists between a husband and wife. The pressure builds and builds until it becomes overwhelming, and the temporary hardship destroys their lifetime relationship. But it doesn't have to be that way. Remember when you and your spouse got married? You promised to love each other in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse? So if you're in the worst part right now, don't give up. Hold on. Stay the course. And never lose sight of the other side of the struggle. This too shall pass.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
Hey, welcome back to Mornings with Carmen. Privileged to be joined now by Van Jones. You certainly recognize him from CNN. He's here to talk with us about the Redemption Project. Van, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on the show.
I can't tell you how excited those of us who are interested in restorative justice, those of us who've been engaged sort of on the Christian side of the conversation related to criminal justice reform with our friends like over at the Colson Center and other partners, to see this series come out on CNN and for it to be so powerful and so widely celebrated. So let's just jump in and talk about it. Talk about why you did the Redemption Project and what the feedback has been so far.
Well, I did it because, the culture is just so toxic and negative and divisive, and it's actually more trendy to not have compassion and not have empathy and just to cancel people and call people out and block people than it is to actually try to have a conversation. And I'm just tired of it. I wanted to put some medicine out in the culture if I could. And as somebody who's done criminal justice work for 25 years or more, I know how many diamonds there are shining behind those walls. Not everybody, but a lot of people, that sometimes, frankly, despite the prison, they turn their lives around. They transform. They find faith. They want to atone. They want to redeem themselves. They want to apologize, but they don't know how. And so we found the people who have been victims of crime, survivors of crime, who 10 years later, 20 years later, still haven't healed, still have questions, still wonder why this had to happen, wonder did the person learn anything. And we just put those two people together. We share their backstories, their very human backstories, and then we just put them in a room and film them face-to-face, sometimes even knee-to-knee, having that conversation for the first time about what happened. And I tell you, get your Kleenex box ready, because it is a powerful show. And we have had 99% positive reactions on Twitter, which nobody's ever seen before. Twitter is a tough environment. I call Twitter hater. They may as well just call it hater, because it's just so negative. And yet, past 3 weeks, 99% positive response on Twitter. And five more episodes to go, 9 p.m., Sunday night, CNN. That's Anthony Bourdain's slot. So that's very, very sacred ground for us at CNN to have these kind of stories told in that time slot. And we are hoping that people will watch, DVR, Because after you watch it, you're going to want to share it with people, so DVR it. And, you know, I'm just excited about being able to do something positive in prime time.
So, Van, there's no question that it's positive. There's no question that words that need to be used to describe what's happening go well beyond the sort of secular vocabulary. And I'm aware of that as I watch it. I'm aware that, you know, you can't have the kind of forgiveness that's necessary or the kind of transformation that is experienced in these situations and in these scenarios without, well, and certainly the word grace comes up. I mean, you can't access those words purely through secularism. So what has been your experience as you have, you know, as you have watched these stories unfold and you have narrated these stories? I mean, I'm certainly aware that God comes up a lot and there's people of faith sitting on both sides of those tables. Has that surprised you?
Yeah. You know, it didn't surprise me, but I had to make sure that in our secularized culture, that didn't get edited out because, you know, people, you know, it's such a secular culture now. I think 25% of people in the culture are non-believers. And so it becomes, you know, well, we don't want to offend anybody by, you know, including any, you know, quote-unquote God talk. Well, on this show, you know, people talk about God and they talk about prayer and we show people, you know, in prayer. And it's not a religious show, but to your point, you know, people turn to their faith in tragedy. And, you know, this is a heartbreak to hope show. And in moments of heartbreak, people turn to faith. And, you know, to get through, they often turn to faith. And then when that moment of hope finally happens in the show, there's a grace there that's just impossible to describe.
Yeah, I appreciate how sensitive you are to those faith lines, to those faith storylines, and, you know, certainly appreciate that you have been right on the forefront of being sure it didn't get edited out. I do think that that is really significant. I think it's going to surprise some people who are listening right now on Christian radio. It's going to surprise some people to hear a CNN host and commentator say those things. And so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, right, is because CNN gets maligned a lot as you know, not, that's not the Christian station, right? You know, that's what some people would say. And so I genuinely appreciate, I heard Chris Saliza recently just talking about the need for people to talk to one another without first assigning, you know, negative, just making all kinds of negative assumptions about one another in advance. I feel like you guys are seeking to, at least at a personal level, if not at a corporate level, change the conversation. Am I sensing that?
Well, look, this show is not a show that you would ordinarily see on television at all. I mean, because
right. It's
not true crime. You know, we're not trying to sensationalize everything. You know, true crime is often about, you know, who done it. You know, you're trying to, you know, should you exonerate this person? Can we catch the killer? That kind of thing. But, you know, this is, you know, we already know who done it in these shows, these eight episodes. It's not true crime. It's about the truth long after the crime, which is that the person behind bars may have grown or changed, and the person who was a victim may still need healing. And so we try to attend to that. And it's a new genre of television. One of the reasons that the reviewers have had a hard time even talking about it is because they're left speechless by seeing something that, you know, frankly, it's miracles being caught on camera. We're catching miracles on film. And there's no way to describe, you know, when you see someone who has suffered for 20 years, you know, have a breakthrough because they finally got some information or they finally at least, you know, got a chance to sit across the room from someone or a table from someone. These are miracles of human spirit and often of faith. And, you know, I'm proud that CNN is taking a chance on a show like this. I don't know if they're deliberately trying to change the conversation writ large, but the fact that CNN is putting something this powerful on the air in prime time, I think is a very hopeful sign.
I do too. Hey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Van, I would love for you to just share one of the stories. Maybe give us a sense of what we're going to see this Sunday night when we tune in to the Redemption Project. I'm talking with Van Jones from CNN. We're talking about the Redemption Project. It is an 8-part series airing on CNN on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be right back. Continuing my conversation now with Van Jones from CNN, we're talking about the Redemption Project. Van, maybe there is a story that has already aired, or maybe you want to give us a little foretaste of what we're going to experience this coming Sunday night. But I'd love for you to just take us into your own experience of one of these stories.
Well, this coming Sunday is a really, really powerful show. It's a mother in Alaska who lost her son to gun violence, and you know, she's white. You know, she's somebody who, if you've been looking at her, you would never expect that she's somebody who, you know, has gone through the kind of life that she's gone through, and she had her own struggles with, that come out in the show. But she lost her son, her best friend, and she goes to talk to the person in prison who was convicted for that killing. And it's a remarkable show. I don't want to give much of it away because, you know, it really, it's the kind of show that so many surprises happen, so many things you don't expect. And our show is a heartbreak to hope show. And so some people, when they first see it, they say, wow, this is dark. I mean, this woman's, you know, son died. And my God, like, do I want to watch this on a Sunday night? I promise you, if you stick with it, the payoff is unbelievable. You know, sometimes, you know, a breakdown can become a breakthrough if you use it right. And so, you know, so this is one of our more powerful episodes. Last episode, we had a father who lost his daughter in a drive-by shooting, also go to a prison and have a conversation. And I think some people may feel, hey, wait a minute now, is this some soft-on-crime propaganda? Is this some kind of, you know, people get away with whatever they want to get away with and give them a hug and it's all fine? That's not this show. These are people who, you know, gotten serious prison sentences. They are paying their dues. They would not be on my show if they had not already made a serious change in their life and, you know, worked to atone. And yet, how much atoning can you do if you can never look the person in the eyes and apologize? Mm-hmm. You know, it becomes abstract. It just becomes, you know, something that you're talking about in your group circle or in your journal. Anybody can do that. Can you walk in a room? Can you walk in a room with somebody you deeply disappointed or really hurt and really honestly confess and apologize? That's something that's very hard to do in our culture. And also, we've all had things that have been done to us that we don't like and have been hard to get past. Could you listen to that person apologize? So this is not a criminal justice show. It's a deeply human show. The stakes are higher because the underlying incidents are so much more serious. But all of us have done things that we need to apologize for. And all of us have been hurt by someone and have had a hard time moving on. And so the reason I think this show has such, you know, appeal, and I think the reason that why we're getting 99% positive comments in social media, which nobody gets, is because it's such a human show, and we capture these miracles on film, and we capture these moments. And the other thing about this, the show is a quiet show because so much of it is just the looks in people's faces. You know, we let the moment be real. You know, if you're having a tough conversation, you don't always know what to say. Sometimes you just look down at the floor. We just let that happen. You know, so sometimes the look in someone's eye, sometimes it's seeing a big, you know, muscle-bound guy break down crying, you know, which you don't expect, you know, when he tries to explain why he made these terrible decisions. And the words aren't that long or even that important. It's the whole moment that we're able to capture. And I just think it's some medicine. We need some medicine. Our society is so sick, and we're so polarized, and we label, and we blame, and we feel superior to each other, and we're just getting smaller every day, you know, and this is an opportunity to show, you know, people in tough situations trying to be big, and I really, it's a part of my personal ministry. I'm not a minister, but we all have a ministry, and it's a part of my personal ministry to just try to bring grace back into our culture.
That's a profound mission statement, and if each and every one of us were living out that mission statement in whatever vocation we are in, you know, I would argue that, you know, you, as a part of the priesthood of all believers, you know, you certainly, you know, have a ministry, and it's a ministry of reconciliation, and that's what you're doing. You are walking it out in your life, in your area of influence, in your particular vocation, in a way that is bringing the gospel to the surface. And what people choose to do with it is, you know, I think you and I would both acknowledge their own business. But you do bring it to the surface in such a way that if people are going to be honest with themselves, they're going to have to deal with it.
Well, I appreciate your encouragement, and I appreciate everything that you're doing with your platform. You know, I think that we have a mistaken idea in our country now, which is that, you know, these awful people, and, you know, everybody on both sides of the political divide, all those people over there are so awful. And, you know, and I think we forget that, yeah, of course, there's awful people in all political parties, all races, all classes, you know, that's just reality. But the real tragedy in America is not what the awful people are doing. It's that we have so many awesome people in both political parties and in all races and classes who honestly just don't know what to do. We don't know how to help each other. We don't know how to listen to each other. We don't know how to even find each other. And it becomes so easy to just snuggle up in our little, you know, smartphone cocoon and have the algorithm just give us, you know, only things we want to see. And we forget that life is not as simple as, you know, liking and swiping on stuff that you like. You know, we're human. We're complex. People make mistakes. You'll misunderstand. People need each other. We need each other to grow. The disagreements can help us grow. The fact that we're different can help us grow. And we've forgotten that. And, you know, I'm proud of what you're doing. You know, I'm doing my part as best I can. But, you know, let's spread that. And if you want to vote for something positive in our culture, you know, 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, you know, there's Game of Thrones and everything else going on. But, you know, if you can't watch it, at least DVR it and watch it the next day. There's something. And you want to DVR it because you're going to want to share it. From people, after they watch this show, they have so much that they want to talk about. And, you know, sometimes the family members weren't there, your best friend wasn't there, your roommate wasn't there. You know, DVR this whole series, and I think you're going to get a lot of good out of it.
Yeah, Van, I'm actually advocating that people, like, watch it with a small group of people who maybe they are like-minded with, and maybe a diverse group of people with whom they have some disagreements. But this could be the... this could be the subject matter sitting on the other side of the table, that we can sit on the same side of the table and we can talk about it, because it is very provocative. It is very powerful. It is smart, but it's just brutally honest. It's brutally honest about the reality of the world we live in and the need for compassion and forgiveness and mercy. And, you know, as you say, these people are paying their debt to society. But at some point you get to the place where you can't pay what is owed. And so forgiveness has to be a part of this process of restorative justice. All right, you and I are going to have to leave it right there. Van Jones, thank you so much for joining us on Mornings with Carmen, and thank you for the Redemption Project.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, so if after that conversation you are wondering how you're going to walk that conversation out into the world, let me just go ahead and say you're overthinking it. Because as Christians, we know what redemption is. We know what the act of saving grace is in Jesus Christ. We know what it is to turn, to repent. We know what it is to experience forgiveness. And you cannot have a conversation about restorative justice or racial reconciliation or the kind of forgiveness that is happening in the Redemption Project, you really cannot have those conversations in a substantive way apart from a conversation about God. And so the culture is now having a conversation about the Redemption Project. Just consider that for a moment. Consider for a moment that right now the culture is having a conversation because CNN is producing a series called The Redemption Project. And so it's an opportunity for you and I to get into a conversation that the culture is already having and to be the people who bring God back into that conversation. You're going to watch the show and then you're going to ask questions like, wow, where do you think that forgiveness comes from? Wow, what, you know, that's a real turnaround. That's real transformation in a human life. Where does that come from? What is your experience of that? This is not just recovery. This is redemption. This is radical transformation. This is forgiveness. This is grace. All right, friends. So it is Friday. We're not going to be together for a couple of days, but if you missed a show this week, please go to myfaithradio.com and grab the podcast. This one will be up in a couple of hours. Have a great weekend and God bless.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.